CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. The first segment of our show is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Rabia Ketter will be telling us a little bit about disability without poverty. So, can you tell me a little bit about disability without poverty?
Well, disability without poverty is a national movement. It came to being when the federal government made the promise of a Canada disability benefit. In fact, the Prime Minister made this commitment in his throne speech of September 2020. There were conversations happening for a long time around the financial position that people with disabilities were left in when they couldn't attain adequate employment, or because of the barriers that they faced, they couldn't work enough hours, and they were depending on government assistance, provincial benefits, etc., that people were really in deep, deep poverty living with a disability, and something needed to be done about it. Finally, we came to, you know, that realization that, hey, the government's tabled something. We need to now hold them to that promise. They made a promise. We need to hold them to it. So we started to organize, and Disability Without Poverty came to being in 2021, and we just built a movement from sea to sea to sea across this country, engaging grassroots people with disabilities with lived experience from diverse background, a variety of social locations, to, you know, bring people together, whether they were allies or organizations serving people with disabilities or just simply average caring Canadians, to call on the government to make this benefit a reality and end disability poverty.
So I'd imagine in the almost 3 years since that promise was made, a sense of urgency has come up for a lot of people with disabilities, especially those with complex medical needs that really can add up easily.
Absolutely, absolutely. People, prior to the pandemic, people with disabilities were living in poverty. During the pandemic, that poverty got worse and worse. And as we're attempting to, you know, pass through this new reality of the pandemic and recovery, you know, the economy, inflation and all that, people with disabilities are finding themselves in deeper and deeper poverty like never before. So urgency, absolutely, absolutely, especially when people are being forced to ask for emergency assistance and try to raise money through social media or through their networks or even, you know, on the street from passersby for their next meal. Over 40% of people living in poverty are disabled. Over 50% of people depending on food banks for their nourishment are disabled.
So
this really is the harsh reality that every Canadian needs to be aware of in terms of the experience of people with disabilities in a country where everybody strives to thrive and thinks that everybody else is thriving as well.
So how are you reaching out to the disability population to let them know that they do have an advocate on their side in this way?
Well, like I said, we came to being in 2021. We established a leadership table of people across the country who are connected at the grassroots level, who have lived experience, different types of disabilities from different backgrounds. We mobilized them. We have done an Angus Reid poll, which reached out to everyday Canadians to get their opinion on disability poverty. We move forward to an e-democracy platform to engage people through a survey and through a platform of conversation, again, to gauge how they would like to be involved in the movement. We have held numerous webinars and online events with artists to engage, again, people with disabilities. Hundreds of people have attended those webinars and have, you know, we're reaching out through our social media platforms. We're pushing out content in French and English. In the 2021 election, in fact, we carried out a campaign to raise awareness about people exercising their right to vote and getting to know each party's platform on disability issues. And we pushed that out in, our leadership team members recorded those messages in Italian, in Cantonese, in Hindi, Punjabi, Urdu, Somali. We pushed it out in diverse languages, in French, of course, and English, to reach out to more and more people with disabilities. And we've also tried to engage ethnic media to give coverage to what we are talking about. We've produced numerous op-eds in mainstream media in French and English to educate the general public about the issues and in turn also reach people with disabilities. And of course, we have established a partners table where we have organizations and advocates of people with disabilities sitting around the table. And we've expanded that reach to include other allies in the broader nonprofits and human service sector, so that we can expand our reach through a word of mouth as well through their various networks and engage their expertise as well and their experience and their knowledge in, again, mobilizing and pushing government to fast-track the Canada Disability Benefit Bill through Parliament.
So if you could send any message to those in power about why this really matters, meaningful impact that a benefit would have, what would you say?
You know, I tell a story, and maybe one of the most impactful experiences that I've had that really made me pause and reaffirm why I'm doing this work and that it is purposeful work is I came back after having a number of meetings in Ottawa, and I went to a local store to buy some groceries in bulk and with a friend. And I'm a person with a disability. I'm blind. So, you know, I'm gainfully employed, lucky me, but I didn't grow up with abundance. My mother was a full-time caregiver of four of us with disabilities. My father worked really, really hard, and generally we were low income. So we weren't thriving. We had most of our basic needs met, but we were not thriving. And thriving means that, you know, yes, you have food on the table, but you can also have the supports you need to do well in school, to have access to recreation and sports and, you know, things like that that are basic to many of us. So, you know, that was my flavor, right? And when I turned 18, I was eligible for ODSP, which made it possible for me to go through school and be able to graduate university and then be able to get a competitive job and work full-time and could give back to the best of my ability to our economy and to our society and to our system, to be a full contributing person. And everybody wants to do that. Everybody desires to do that. My brother with a developmental disability desires to do that, but unfortunately, due to the nature of his disability, he cannot. So when I got to that grocery store in the parking lot, a gentleman approached us. He was in a wheelchair, and he said, "Ladies, I can give you a bus ticket. Can you please buy me a meal? My social worker was supposed to meet me here, and they're late. And I don't have money for food." And we were like, okay, we'll get him food. We went in, we had to wait a half hour. He told us exactly what the best deal was. You know, there was a special on 12 chicken wings. And he just wanted that combo of 12 chicken wings and a Pepsi. And we decided to throw in an extra order of fries. And we came back out. And he said, we thought he would give up on us because it took us a half hour in that lineup. And we said to him, we thought you would have given up on us by now. And he said, no, I knew you'd come back. And I said to him, I said, have you heard of the Canada Disability Benefit and our work, Disability Without Poverty? And he goes, yeah, I've heard something, but is it really going to happen? And I said, I promise you it's going to happen. And you know what, Cam, I promise that we are going to make this happen for people with disabilities as quickly as possible. We are working day and night to keep the pressure on. We are working day and night to send the message that enough is enough and that people with disabilities need money to flow to them and they need it now. It's not good enough in a society like ours to leave our society's most vulnerable members so far behind. It's just not good enough anymore. It never was, but we're not gonna live with it anymore. We are going to keep demanding that this benefit become a swift reality, and it's making its way through. You know, like it's working. Our voice is being heard. We have somebody with a disability in government that is a true and genuine champion, regardless of politics.
Right.
The minister introducing this bill is a person with a disability, and she knows that once her political career ends, she has to live with the disability community, so she better do right by us.
Like, thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. In this segment of our show, Heidi Wallace will be telling us a little bit about ACD. So, what can you tell me about ACD?
ACD is a nonprofit organization that was started by parents of children with a creatine deficiency almost 11 years ago now. There's three different kinds of creatine deficiencies. There's two that are an issue with making creatine. And so, those do have a treatment, maybe not perfect treatments, but the kiddos take creatine orally. And that, especially if it starts early, helps them to develop pretty much normally. The third kind of creatine deficiency is a creatine transporter deficiency, and that is an issue not with making the creatine. They do that just fine, but it's actually like pulling the creatine into the cells in the brain and the muscle where it's needed. And so there's no treatment for those kiddos, and that and getting the kids with GAMPS and AGAT diagnosed early is really, you know, why our organization was started, to support research into cure for creatine transporter deficiency and help these families that could be, you know, you could live a normal life if you could diagnose this in your child while they're really young. So what it means to families if their child has CTD with no treatment, or if their child with AGAT or GAMP doesn't get the creatine they need, is lifelong disabilities, and specifically that's intellectual disabilities, usually low muscle tone, and other global developmental delays, often seizures. And so it's really, you know, the impact is huge, and and we were started to try to change that.
So how do you reach out to the affected families to let them know that there is support and that you're there to partner with them as they go through this journey?
That can be one of the challenges, you know, because that's private information that someone was diagnosed with a disorder. So there's not really a list for us to start with and reach out to. So we have a support group on Facebook. We have a website, and we try to, you know, create a lot of materials that we post and have an active blog on our website so that when the families get a diagnosis and they look for resources, hopefully they find us. And then we've got a little sign-up form on the website so they can say, hey, I want to join your network, and we welcome them in and try to, you know, find them support with other families in their area and then just give them all the resources we possibly can. But, you know, it's hard to find rare disease patients because they're so few and far between. The other thing we do is go to conferences and talk to the clinicians that are there and say, hey, are you screening for these disorders? And do you have patients? And if they say yes, we give them resources and say, we pass this along, please, and let your families know that there is support, because usually they're the only family in a province or state, and they don't know anyone else to answer all these questions like, you know, what can I expect for my child? What have you done that's helped your child? Do they ever talk? And so, yeah, we kind of just go about it in a lot of different ways, hoping that we can connect with families.
So, do you know offhand about how many people are affected by these disorders?
It's hard to say because often they are not misdiagnosed, but they are initially diagnosed with things like autism, and other diagnoses include cerebral palsy. I've heard of an Angelman's diagnosis, so it seems that they're massively underdiagnosed because the symptoms are so similar to so many other disorders. In the literature, there are just a couple hundred of the three disorders combined, but there's estimates that, you know, creatine transporter deficiency is the second most common X-linked cause of intellectual disability. It's just that the diagnosis is not there. And it's hard to get a lot of people interested in screening and looking for something early in life that doesn't have a treatment. And so, you know, we're kind of going at it from both directions. Like, let's get a treatment and let's see if we can get newborn screening happening for these disorders, so parents don't have to keep going through this painful odyssey of looking for a diagnosis for years and years. So we are rare disorders. We don't know exactly the prevalence, though.
So in your time with the association, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
So for GAMT deficiency, we have been, we applied to have GAMT added in the U.S. to the federal newborn screening recommended list. And that took about 6 years, and that was GAMT was finally added to that list the beginning of this year. And so that's a pretty big deal. You know, once you get on that list, there's only about 40 disorders on that list, and a lot of screening labs throughout the world really look at that list as, you know, well vetted and reliable. And once you get on there, you can get people adding your disorder. So we're hopeful that, you know, kids with GAMT can be getting picked up and preventing disability. The other big success was that we've been collaborating with researchers for years. You know, we've had a medical advisory board, and we have scientific symposiums where people come from around the world. And we're just trying to connect the dots and increase collaboration. And now we've got a group of scientists at the University of Utah that just last week we funded the start of the first creatine deficiency research center. So we've got funded and really interested folks looking at potential treatments for creatine deficiencies, and we're going full speed ahead right now. So I think both of those things are what we're most proud of and excited about.
I thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Did you know CGEM collaborates with clubs and organizations both on the University of Windsor campus and in the general Windsor Essex community? There are a bunch of different ways your group can collaborate with CGEM to help bring it more attention, but also make your current group project a little easier. We can schedule an interview to help the community learn more about your club or organization. Don't worry, the interview can be pre-recorded, so have no fear of misspeaking. If you're looking for a smaller way to advertise something special with your group, look no further. We can create PSAs for events, fundraisers, volunteer calls, new clubs, and more. We have you covered. Then there's events. If your group is struggling to get everything accounted for with your event, why not collaborate with CGEM? We can help gather volunteers, secure a venue, equipment, catering, and more. Save yourself the stress of setting up your event while creating a new connection. Interested or just have questions? Email us at info.cgmfm@gmail.com. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Rabia Ketter told us a little bit about Disability Without Poverty, and we heard a little bit about ACD from Heidi Wallace. In this segment of our show, Sean Wiltshire will be giving us an update on his employment work. So with the expansion to Canada's disability benefits, how do you see that impacting employment opportunities?
Well, I think any time that people don't have to live in poverty is one of those days that we always hope for. I think what it will do is give people tools to expand their options. We have always said that folks with disabilities want to work in the community and live in the community. I think the challenge here is that people think that somehow if you have a disability, you are provided with all the resources you need to manage those supports. And as many folks know, that is simply not the case. So I think with the expansion of that, and also I think, Cam, something else we're seeing is the recognition that the supports to folks with disabilities is an important labor market issue. In particular, yesterday in Manitoba's provincial budget, they increased the wages for folks who support individuals with disabilities and recognized the value that they bring both to the individual's lives and to the community. So any expansion of supports, I think, is an important and momentous issue. But I think one of the biggest things that we have to look at is that how we'll empower people to live better lives.
So that being said, with an expanded benefit comes the possibility of better access to transportation and being able to actually get on-site to a job.
So. Yes, absolutely. I mean, people will have... I mean, I think it gives people options that are also representative of the community that we want to live in. Another example would be transit is a problem for many people who have poverty issues or are marginalized, not only folks with disabilities, but new Canadians and other folks. In some jurisdictions, income support programs in larger cities now include a transit pass. So folks are able to not only get to the appointments, but they are able to be more participatory in the community. Even if they struggle with poverty issues, they have some access to transportation. Now, Canada being a wide coast-to-coast country, this works in large metropolitan areas, but transportation is a serious challenge for many folks with disabilities in rural areas as well.
So, with the trend of more people continuing to work from home with an expanded benefit, it's also possible they'd be able to get the actual technology or equipment they'd need to be able to actually work remotely.
Yeah, and I think that there's a general consideration now that folks don't have to be physically present in a lot of ideas. I mean, while the pandemic allowed folks with disabilities to participate more, it didn't really solve some of the social isolation that folks felt. You may have been able to participate in work and meetings, but the social aspects of our community, our life, our work-life balance, were still not equal. I think that folks, technology will continue to play a critical role in accessibility, everything from computer readers to the idea that, you know, artificial intelligence can help folks, you know, better represent what they want to say. I think one of the challenges we have is that the understanding that technology is advancing quickly and we need to continue to be current. I think that also falls to folks who are working who have a disability, that they continue to challenge the employer to be on the forefront of those accessibility options. You know, for folks that are not working, I mean, that will always be a challenge, I think, where to find the connectivity for the technology and sort of being able to take your place.
So when you mention keeping employers in the right headspace, do you have any advice for those out there with disabilities who might be trying to break into a work market just for the very first time? Just someone who says, I have a disability, but I want to work. Let me prove what I'm capable of.
I think the very first thing that I would advise anybody looking for work is a skills inventory. And it doesn't have to be a formalized process, Cam. I think one of the easiest things to do is acknowledge that you have skills. Many folks with disabilities have not been supported to identify all the skills that they have. So I think that, you know, people depending on just a resume to represent them probably would not be advisable because people are so much more than their resume. So I think that the formalized piece of your education and your work experience, while valuable, it's also important to highlight the skills and not the disability. And I think also working with local community agencies, and I say this to folks a lot because many folks with disabilities say, well, you know, I've tried to get a job, and you're right. They have, and if folks with disabilities could get past the barriers, they already would have. So I think accessing and using programs that are there to support the business community to advance their knowledge of diversity and how to be a more diverse employer. And I also think that, you know, talking to friends that have disabilities that are already working, a recommendation to apply at a company where somebody you know already has a disability and works is a great indicator of the model or the culture that that employer creates as well. I think those are important things to remember. But absolutely, people have to remember that they have skills and they're just not formal.
So it brings to mind something I was told once about matching skills. Someone said to me once, do what you're good at, not what everyone thinks you should be good at. So on that basis, I think you're right. A skills assessment can be an extremely valuable tool.
You have to make it formal, right? I mean, we don't have to clinicalize every process that we engaged in. It's often having those conversations with folks to identify those skills that the individual may not see as valuable, but people who work in the labor market field would say, wow, those skills are really marketable. And as we continue to see challenges in labor markets across the country, we continue to have to adapt our understanding of neurodiversity or of employer need. But as long as we're adapting, we're continuing to move forward. And I think that's the critical piece here. Folks with disabilities have high skills. They have a real opportunity here for businesses to hire somebody and get the work done that they need. And as I say to employers, the economy is depending on you to be a more diverse employer, that they can do the job. How they get to work or how they may use the computer is fairly irrelevant if at the end of the day, the product is what you asked for.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
You're welcome.
Fact is, my friends, those in power make all kinds of promises to people with disabilities. Promises are easy. Following through can be a little more difficult. However, I maintain that the value of an expanded disability benefit is in the expanded opportunities and even the dignity afforded to a person with a disability. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.